When a waitress uses a gun to raise the caliber of her service, David Caruso has the case scattered, smothered, and covered on the next CSI Miami.
What do we got?
Well, Horatio, a Waffle House waitress is accused of shooting a customer who was having eggs and toast. She says she won't talk.
I guess we can do this the hard way or the over easy way.
David Caruso is egging on his team in a mad scramble for justice. This case is hot, and the plate is too, on CSI Miami.
She confessed, Horatio. The powder burns you found on the breakfast sausage did it.
I'm not surprised. I knew we'd find the link.
When it comes to right and wrong, David Caruso never waffles. On the next CSI Miami.
Promise outstanding content, but when it's time to deliver, they fall flat on their ridiculous faces. Enter LA Talk Radio, a cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk station that delivers totally original content without any commercials. Log on to latalkradio.com and get involved with the best talk radio station on the internet. LA Talk Radio, we say what we want.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Last Minute Tax Filer.
Mr. Last Minute Tax Filer.
You know exactly where you put the tax forms you were mailed in January. They're on top of the fridge. Oh, on the nightstand? Are they in the pile near the computer? On top of the microwave?
Where the heck is that W-2?
Don't worry, Mr. Last Minute Tax Filer. You'll find them right after you call to make an appointment with your accountant. Sure, he'll have an opening at 9 p.m. on April 15th.
Oh, no, the line is busy.
Oh, well, you'll just do your own taxes then.
Get ready for interest and penalties. Yeah.
So next time you're rifling through the junk drawer for those receipts you're pretty sure you kept, remember, you're not alone. You're among the millions proud to go by the name of Mr. Last Minute Tax Filer, a real American hero.
Mr. Last Minute Tax Filer.
No Schedule C, red flag, automatic audit.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio. Get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
Good morning and welcome to Tuesday, April 13th.
Good morning, Sam.
Oh, that sounded very awake.
This is my deep raspy voice. This is my lounge.
Oh, is
voice.
That what it is? Okay,
it's
so
my, just
it's a bedroom voice.
It's called not... I just brushed my teeth with a bottle of Jack.
Oh, is that what it is?
No, that's okay. One of those. That's one of the new pop song. She's like, when I leave, brush my teeth with a bottle of Jack. When I leave for tonight, I ain't coming back.
I see. That's where you got it. Okay. Who sings that song?
Her name is, what's that girl's name? Kesha with a dollar sign.
Mm-hmm.
She's actually, her stuff is funny because it's so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if she means it or if it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
If she does it as like a parody, as like funny, then I think she's funny. But if she means it, then I don't like her.
I see.
But I don't know yet. Yeah, because it's like Lady Gaga writes all these top pop hit LA songs. I mean, you know, pop songs.
Mm-hmm.
But they're such a farce. They're so funny, you know. I mean, I think Lady Gaga is one of the funniest women comedians out there.
Yeah.
I think it, and I don't think she takes herself serious as far as the content. I mean, she's serious about the art, but I don't think that the storylines and the lyrics are that.
Yeah, know? She's about the performance.
Yeah,
know?
I mean, she takes the art and the performance serious, but I think what she's saying is, mm-hmm. you know, it's satirical and it's funny.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, this girl, I'm not quite sure if she's that on top of it to have
she's
made it.
She's not that smart, huh?
I don't know yet. I don't know. Yeah. But she says stuff. She's like, you know, it's just all that crazy stuff. But I heard an interview with her where she did say that she wrote this song when she was, like, the brokest in her life,
mm-hmm.
and it was just about wanting to have fun,
mm-hmm.
and you know, now she's not broke anymore. She's her that song. She had a song. That song called TikTok is the name of the
song.
Oh,
okay.
TikTok, da da da.
Tell me something. Did you do your makeup in the car this morning or in a rush?
No, does it look bad?
No, not at all. It looks beautiful. But on this side, I think you need to rub it in a little more.
Oh, really?
So when you're like in front of the mirror,
well,
you
thanks,
can do that.
For calling me on the Global Radio.
Yeah, well,
no, that's good.
It's better that I do than someone else.
The reality is when it's
now
early.
It looks perfect.
Well, when it's early.
Yeah.
It's funny because I actually did it at home today.
Uh-huh.
But when it's early, you don't have the right lighting. You don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
How's it look?
No, you look fine. Now it looks fine.
I've got a meeting today.
It was just a little bit shiny, but now it looks great.
Well, it's supposed to be kind of glossy.
It is.
It's supposed to be,
the other side isn't. So.
It's not sparkly at all?
No.
Whatever. It is.
Yeah. No, but it looks great. I mean, you're looking stunning this morning.
Okay, thank you.
And full makeup and black dress and everything.
Yeah, I have
So where are you heading out to?
Well, I was hired to be a spokes TV host for an upcoming kind of, it's called the Salon and Spa TV show. It's called Vision TV.
Mm-hmm.
And you know when you go into like a coffee shop or certain businesses and they have their own media that plays on a flat screen?
Right.
And this is specifically for salons and spas.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done some work with them back in January, February, and they're going to be doing some filming out here for the top 10 spas in LA in June. And so I'm meeting with one of the business partners today just to kind of a meet and greet because I haven't met the other guy.
I see. Okay. Yeah. And what would you be doing there?
I'm the one that interviews.
I see.
I stand in with the camera and the microphone.
How cool is that, huh?
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, the first gig I've only done one gig with them, and it was at the International Salon and Spa Expo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my first time. It was more of an audition kind of tryout, and I was really nervous. I just hadn't had a whole lot of camera experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a natural, but when it comes to the mechanics and the technicalities of it,
right.
I needed to kind of get my feet wet a little bit. So they were very cool with it, and I didn't do my best, but I was okay.
Yeah.
But they loved me still. They thought I was great.
Good.
But yeah, you walk around. Let me tell you, you walk around with a camera mm-hmm. and a microphone, and people think you are it.
Really?
They don't know that I'm on an audition and that I may or may not get the job and I've got roots and everything.
Right.
But people were kissing my ass. They were
really?
Like, yeah. Wow. They thought I could like hook them up or, you know, get their business, you know, promoted. And
right.
It was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. People were, you know,
people love talking about themselves.
Well, and you see what happens when people have a like for example right here we have the radio and the microphones in front of people
right.
and I know that people can clam up with that
right
and then especially add a camera on top of that people mm-hmm. clam up or they become super self-conscious
right.
conscience
uh-huh.
and it takes away all the kind of the fluidity of it and
yeah.
you know the organicness
yeah,
of it all.
Yeah.
But it was really funny because anytime I've done headshots or anything where there's a camera on you,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the camera was off me. Nobody would care who I was or think yeah. I was anything. As soon as the camera's pointed at you, people look.
Right.
They honk. They
yeah,
think,
they're like, who is this?
Yeah,
you know?
Who is this? And
yeah.
I loved every minute of it.
What TV show is that from?
Loved every minute of it.
I'm sure.
Yeah. But it was a lot of fun. So I'm supposed to be doing some work with them in June.
Good.
They're going to yeah. be out here. They're from New York, but.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you're putting yourself out there and it's good. You know, that's
yeah, it's
the way
good for real.
It.
It pays
yeah.
well. You
I
know?
Mean, the jobs are not going to come to you. That's for sure. You know, you got to go out there and get them.
Well, you know. I just see the right few things to happen and bam, bam.
Bam, bam.
Bam. What happened to Kara? Well, you know, bam.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I don't know.
So your guest hopefully will show up today.
She's going to show.
Right?
And she's well worth it.
Yeah?
Yeah. She's so fun. I mean,
okay,
I don't really know her.
But you flaked out yesterday.
Well, I flaked out, too. Let's be honest. I gotta
Why?
Be, no, I'm saying I flaked out. You know, you
like
had to call
before?
Me.
Yeah, but yeah. that's not the same, you know. I mean, this is your own show, you know. She was a guest.
Well, I'm just going to, you know, I want her to feel we could talk shit about her when she leaves. I don't want her to be listening now.
No, we're not going to talk shit, you know. It's
yeah.
just that, I don't know. I mean, she's not the only one, you know. People have done it before.
I don't know if people get that we are an award-winning show.
Yeah, well, we'll have to let them know.
Yeah, and that this isn't some podcast in somebody's garage that, you know, three people listen to.
That's true. That's very true.
It's kind of a big deal. But whatever.
Yeah.
But no, I approached her and I asked her because I wanted to start getting some really cool comedians on the show and
right.
and she's doing some cool stuff and yeah, I mean, I'll let her tell you all about that. But
okay, so we'll find out about
really,
that.
She's
a
really
bit,
cute, really funny and
a little later.
Yeah.
And yeah, we also have a a Republican strategist who's going to come on the show. She was actually in the studio last year, and TJ was here, so it was sort of like a very interesting political stuff. But she talks politics, she talks entertainment, so, you know, we can talk
cool.
about
cool, I would love to. Is she
want,
coming
you know?
In, or is she...
No, she's going to be on the phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I bet TJ had a field day with her.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He must have loved
like,
it.
Yeah, they were, like, joyful together.
They were, like, joyful. They were, like, really happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, TJ's intense, but he cracks me up.
Yeah, so he might call in. I ran into him on the way
Oh, good.
Up,
I hope he does.
He might. But
he's an intense
I'm sure
guy.
We're gonna
I like
have,
him.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to have enough to talk about.
Well, good.
And I got to tell you, I'm starting to lean to the right, you know? I mean, I'm usually, like, center when it comes to politics. I don't really identify with the parties.
Yeah.
But, you know, the stuff I've been seeing lately and that, you know, I'm really getting disillusioned mm-hmm. with the Democrats, you know?
Well, I think now is a very different time.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of people that are in your situation that are kind of using their brain and going, wait a minute. And not that it's bad to be a Democrat. I don't believe that at all. But I kind of feel like right now there's so much stuff that's kind of packaged a certain way, but then there's so much stuff that's concealed underneath it.
Right.
And, you know, Claire, when she was on the show, her brother sent her a pretty heated email mm-hmm. about the health care. Mm-hmm. And but he also, I mean, he brought up some really great points, but he also was pretty upset with the fact that she even had views that were conservative, because he automatically associates that as being against his lifestyle and against who he is. And the reality is, I think that there's so much labeling that goes on, mm-hmm. and I'm just now starting to get more involved politically. I've never been that, just like you, I've never really been politically charged, and I haven't really found my identity in politics, nor do I ever want to be mm-hmm. this is who I am, because I kind of feel like God is everywhere, and I think that there's intentions that we have and things that are good. I mean, no one side has it right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, as I'm starting to, like you, identify myself a little bit more conservative and more Republican, I'm starting to see that I'm put into a category that has all this stigma with it, and I don't even know what it is. Like, I don't even know why somebody that's just now meeting me and I start to have conservative views, that apparently I'm on this team now that represents all this stuff.
That's what it is, you know. I mean, I think both parties are too extreme, you know. That's why it's hard for me to really.
It's weird. Like, I get all this like animosity. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm just saying I don't believe in big government. Mm-hmm. I don't believe the healthcare bill is good for your health. But that doesn't mean I hate gay people. It doesn't mean that I'm, you know, all these things where, you know, I don't care about the homeless. I don't care about the poor. But apparently you're put into this category that you're this, and this is what people do. They villainize opposing viewpoints mm-hmm. to get their point across.
Well, obviously,
and it's a tool, but people need to use their brains and kind of like.
You need to demonize the competition.
Exactly,
you know,
but
the
that's, I mean, in one way it's intelligent if you want to win something, but in another way it's completely, it's just so, it's like stick to the talking point, stick to the issues.
Yeah.
You know, don't make them out to be this, you know, you go straight to discrediting people and
people
are afraid to believe what they believe because, oh, well, if I believe this, then I'm going to be looked at as though I'm this bigot or I'm this cold, calloused, rich person that doesn't care about poor people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like people are kind of, I think, being bullied and manipulated by all the labeling to really say what they believe.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. When it comes to politics, people are passionate. They're mm-hmm. emotional about it, you know. And that's why sometimes it's just a moot point to even try and argue with the other side.
Well, I think part of when you're having those kind of conversations with, not necessarily on a political forum, but when it's interpersonal, mm-hmm. I always try to, or I've gotten to where I start trying to really assess, is the person open? Do they want to hear what I have to say? Because I've entered into conversations in the past with people that they don't care what I have to say. They've already decided what I think.
Right.
They're
not listening.
They've already decided my character, and they're ready to take all of their anger and hurt and frustration and whoever's hurt them, and they're ready to put it on me. Mm. And that to me is like, well, you just really want me to be like a garbage disposal. You want me to be like an ashtray or a toilet.
Right.
You don't really want to exchange back and forth.
Right.
And I mean,
you're
I don't even
talking at you. Yeah.
Yeah. Just and I don't even know where it's all coming from. Like, I know I didn't have that effect on you in the last mm-hmm. 2 minutes I met you.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So, but you, going back to what you're saying, you're starting to see, you're starting to lean more to the right.
Yeah, yeah, because it's starting to make more sense to me, you know, with this administration. Anyway,
yeah.
You
what
know?
Is it that you've
And the thing is, the reason I really moved away from the Republicans is because of George Bush. I thought he was a terrible president, and I just thought that, you know, everybody that got behind him didn't get it. And but we'll talk about it more, you know. I mean, I don't want to make the whole show about
politics. No, that's fine. I'm just interested to know where you're coming from.
Yeah, yeah, but that's, you know, that's pretty much it, you know. And I'm starting to look and see the all this political correctness and stuff that's really like getting to me sometimes, you know. People aren't willing to say the way it is
because they're afraid to be politically
incorrect. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's more a liberal type of a thing.
You know? Well, I'd have to agree with you. I mean, we live in the heart of that, wouldn't you say? Mm-hmm. I think that I don't know how New York is, but I know that L.A. is, it's strangling, and I've heard this with other cities like San Francisco, and that there's so many different agendas that you can't be free to say what you really think, because if it's not packaged a certain way for certain consumption, then it's like your hands are tied.
Yeah.
And I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, you can offend anybody on accident.
Yeah.
You can offend anybody.
You know, I mean, some of the things, it's like, you know, it seems to be like politically incorrect if you say there are a lot of Mexicans here. But there are. You know, I mean, it's not like a politically correct type of a thing. You know, there are, and it's a fact, and that's it, you know. And, you know, so... You know, and euphemisms and the way we call people things and all that stuff, you know, it's just, I think it's a waste of time, you know.
Well, I mean, as a comedian, I've only had one person, and which I think is pretty good. I've only had one person that was offended. But I have a character that I do called Diva Love, and she's a black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, first of all, before I say this, I went to a black church for 3 years, and I don't even know if I can say black, or if I'm supposed to say African-American, but I mean... I say black, and it's not a derogatory term when I'm not in my heart when I say it. It's
right.
Just whatever. But I love the culture, which is diverse. The culture is very diverse. But what I've experienced in the black community is, and especially going to church with them, is that they are more laid back. They're more celebratory when it comes to like worshiping God and everything. Nothing's stiff. It's very open. And obviously musically, and there's just such an ease I find with the black community that when I was in Detroit, I was looking for churches when I was there for 4 months, and I went to a bunch of white churches, and I went to this one black church, and I mean, I just felt so embraced.
Mm.
I walked in the door. It was hi, how you doing? And it was like, I felt like I could breathe. I felt like I could just be myself.
Yeah. Well, that's a pretty good story.
Well, no, it's great. Yeah. It's really great. But what I'm saying is, I mean, I've picked up some of the lingo, and clearly it's just like white people. Everybody talks differently. Not everybody's talks like this. And, you know, and then there's white trash where they're like, hey, how you doing? And there's so many different types of dialects within the different communities. Now, this character that I do, Diva Love, is like... You know, she got her tongue purping and doing like this, you know, and a little bit of ghetto slang, okay? And I use it in my comedy, a routine, and people really like it, okay? Boop, boop, boop. So basically, that's the voice that I do.
Okay.
Well, I do it all the time, and I don't even think if it's going to offend anybody.
Right.
Black, white, or whatever. I don't even think if it's going to offend anybody, because... I just think it's funny.
Yeah.
And it's not directed towards any specific person. It is a character.
Right.
And I was at a job one time where this girl who was black, and I used that voice not towards her, but I was using the voice. And she took me aside, and she told me that she was really offended, and that, you know, she doesn't talk that way, and the friends that she hangs out with doesn't talk that way. And I got to be honest, I felt so bad. Mm. I was like, oh, my gosh, because I, in my... heart had no intention to offend her or project that onto her, and I don't think, and but it really did offend her. So I was apologetic, and I told her, look, that wasn't where I was coming from, but I do want to respect how you feel. And we were in a workplace, so I definitely didn't want her to feel uncomfortable at work.
Yeah, but I mean, she went to a fucking comedy club, you know?
No, this was at work, but I mean...
Oh, this was at work.
Yeah, this was at a job I was working.
I see,
but
okay.
Here's what I want to say. I mean, I've had my friends... You know, I'm extreme, if I am extreme. I think I just live my life out loud.
Right.
And I know that my friends love it, but sometimes they are even a little bit cautious of, well, Kara, don't go too far. Well, Kara, you know, your job isn't to be me, and your job isn't to censor me. You know, you're along for the ride, but I'm not asking you to mediate.
Yeah.
And I'm really passionate about that because we're all called to be different people and do our different things. And if you're uncomfortable with it, there's a reason why you're not doing it and I'm doing it.
Yeah.
There's a reason why that's not your personality and it's mine. Because we have different ways that we communicate, express ourselves, entertain people, and encourage and inspire people. And I this is the way that I do it, and I think it's really organic to who I am.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm saying is...
Look, people will get offended by anything.
Yeah, you know? And that's the thing. Like, I mean, do you cater to everybody?
That's what I'm saying.
No.
You know, I mean, forget about this political correctness. You know, you state your mind, you say what you feel, and that's it, you know?
I mean, there's a point where, yeah, I want to be sensitive to how people feel, and I don't want to intentionally hurt anybody, but I also need to have freedom to be who I am, mm-hmm. and you got to kind of own a little bit of your sensitivity.
Right.
That's what I think. But speaking of political correctness, I was just reading on Yahoo Online. It was talking about spanking kids,
mm-hmm.
okay? And that the what is it the it says here that the American Academy of Pediatrics does not endorse spanking for any reason, citing its lack of long-term effectiveness as a behavior-changing tactic. And it says that kids that are spanked were more likely to be aggressive by the age of 5. And they called it like a corporal punishment, and they've also talked about that the researchers accounted for factors such as acts of neglect by the mother, violence or aggression between the parents, maternal stress and depression, the mother's use of alcohol and drugs, and even whether the mother considered abortion while pregnant with a child. Are these maybe reasons why they spank? Anyway, they're basically connecting the idea that spanking and aggression, they keep seeing a connection at that early age of 5.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, you know. I don't condone it at all. I don't think it's necessary.
See, that's
so
funny. I'm on the other end.
I've raised two kids, and there was never a need to spank either one of them.
Well, I don't think you should use it liberally. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's something you should just whack away just because you're frustrated and you don't know how to control your kids and mm-hmm. you don't know how. But I got to be honest, there is a time for it. And I think that when you don't express that ever in a kid's life, I'm talking sparingly, you know, not the first thing you'd go to. But there's a time, because they said, well, kids don't understand why they're being spanked. They don't understand what they did wrong. They just know that they were spanked. Well, let me tell you, there's a time when a kid, you tell them no, they don't need to understand why. They need to know an authority. They need to know that this is mom, this is dad, and I need to respect them.
Exactly, but not through violence.
Well,
you know?
I don't consider it violence. And
you don't, but they would. You
no,
know?
It doesn't matter.
I mean,
they're a two-year-old, three-year-old kid. They not when they understand. When
you're
they
hitting
understand.
A person that's assault, in my book.
I think it's more. I think it's honestly. Now every child is different. Mm-hmm. Your kids may not have needed it. And again, I'm not talking liberal use of this. Mm-hmm. I'm talking when there are times, and I do think there's an age limit on it. I think there's an age when you get spanked and it's not productive. Mm-hmm. It's more about your anger than controlling the
That's
kid.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's always like that, you know,
well,
because, look, when do people use violence when someone else doesn't, quote-unquote, listen to them?
But
okay? When someone doesn't do things their way, then they resort to violence. I think this is the same thing. Now, I'm not going to – I don't consider it as violence because
it's
I don't
violent.
Think – It's not violent. But what I'm saying is it gives the wrong messages to the kids, and it shows that you're too weak to be able to handle your kid – in a mature way.
Listen, I'm saying that every child is different, and your kids may not have needed that, and your relationship with them was different.
Maybe even if they needed it, I would not have
done
it.
Well, that's fine, but what I'm trying to bring up a different point of where it can be productive. Mm-hmm. Now, if I have kids, believe me, that's the last thing I ever want to do. But up until maybe the age of, like, you know, 8 or 9, if there are some severe things that happen and they need to have a strong hand, and I'm not talking about violence, but I'm talking about they need to understand some things that they'll understand why not to do it later, but right now they need to be scared into not doing it. It's mm-hmm. like when you tell your kid, don't cross the road. They're not going to understand about Big Mac trucks, and they're not going to understand about cars. They just need to know that dad said don't cross the road, and they'll learn about the reason why later.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, what I want to say here is, if you heard the scripture that says, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something to that. When parents do not, I'm not talking excessive here, because I agree with you. I think it's counterproductive. But when the parent never establishes, when needed, an authority an authority with their kids. I have seen so many kids, especially in LA, that are the nastiest spoiled brats, and their parents think they're so damn cute. Mm-hmm. And does that mean you go around whacking your kid? No. But is there a time and place for it? Yes. And should that be every day? No. But I mean, I think, because for me, I was spanked a lot growing up and I completely resented it. But that was because it was misused. It was like, for me growing up, it had everything to do with my parents felt out of control. They didn't know the details and they just thought, oh, spanking's going to solve it. Yeah. That doesn't solve anything.
Right. But, so you see, now you're qualifying it and you're making it too complicated. I mean,
no, I'm just saying to say that you never, there. No, I'm saying to say that it's altogether bad and there's no place for it, mm-hmm. I think is a very PC kind of like, oh, I think, you know what, you want to, that's, that, to take it off the table, to me, is to, is almost detrimental, can be detrimental to raising kids, mm-hmm. and I think that there's a time and place for it, sorry about that.
Yeah, I think about sparing the rod, I think that was figurative, not literal, and, you know, I usually say that when a kid is like a pain in the ass, usually it's because the parents raised them that way.
You know? I would agree.
I mean, kids do. I mean, and they do come to the world with a certain temperament, a certain personality, and so forth. And I don't deny that. But the bottom line is, a parent has to learn how to raise their kid by education, by example, and not by hitting them.
Well, listen, I'm not saying that that should be the way you raise a child. Like they only get smacked. I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying.
There are
isolated.
No, because I'm not saying.
There's got to be a yes or no here, because.
Sam, I'm saying that spanking kids, okay, there's a way, there is a context for it. That does qualify it. Saying, yeah, it can be beneficial in these kind of circumstances, in this manner. I'm not saying that you should use it excessively or use it instead of, like you said, education, communication, and timeouts and other methods. I'm saying, but are there times, specific times, that they're going to need a swat on the bottom to know dad says no and that's it? Right. Or this, or they've crossed a line that they need to be, because I'm not talking about living in fear, but there's a healthy level of instilling fear into your kids, a healthy kind of fear where there's a respect that's involved. And again, I'm not talking like an everyday.
And meet. You're going to accomplish that like through a few seconds of spanking? You really think all this is going to happen? And all
look,
this
you tell some. Listen,
stuff.
When kids, let's say, when kids, for example, I've seen this, when the kids do something that is extremely dangerous to them, mm-hmm. okay, and they've crossed a line that's really dangerous, and they don't realize that it's dangerous, and you say, you know what, your father's coming home and he's going to deal with this, or whatever the situation is, and dad gives them each a spank. Mm-hmm. Guess what? And especially because it's few and far between, okay, like we're talking like not an everyday thing, we're talking few and far between. Those kids are going to know no.
Yeah, but
and they're
what if the kid is mischievous, you know? I mean, they're going to still do it.
No,
you
know? I'm talking about there's a place
for it. It does not guarantee that it's going to put the kid in a place.
Neither does this PC, just love your kids and just talk to them. That doesn't guarantee
it's
anything
either.
It's not
about love your kids. It's about, you know, educate and set an example.
That doesn't, you know what, you have kids that are strong-willed that aren't going to respond to that either. I'm saying every kid's an individual.
Right.
There's a time and place for it. I think it should be used in a certain context. And I don't think it's unhealthy is what mm-hmm. I'm saying. But I think that there is this wave of trying to govern how people parent their kids and tell them this is how you have to do it for every kid. And I don't agree with that.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of child abuse, you know? I mean,
we're not talking about child abuse, Sam.
No, but we're not, because at a certain point, you see, that's what I'm saying, is that someone else might really hit their kid and say, hey, I was just spanking them, you know? I was just teaching him.
Okay, what would that look like?
So at what point do you draw the line,
you
know?
Well, you tell me.
That's why I'm saying if you don't
do it, it doesn't happen. A swat on the bottom is not the same as punching your kid or smacking them across the face or throwing them through a window. And I think that's the danger, is saying that we're trying to fear people into, I can't discipline my kid the way that I think that they should because I'm going to be looked at as a child abuser. And it's like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think our guest is calling. Maybe we can continue the discussion
okay,
with her,
bring it up.
You know?
Okay.
Yes, good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you? This is Noelle.
Noelle, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Great. We're wonderful. Where are you calling us from?
From Arkansas.
Arkansas. Oh, wow. That's a little far from here.
Arkansas, girl.
So, Noelle, you were on the show in person last year, right, when TJ was here?
Absolutely. absolutely. It was a lot of fun, and I ended up seeing TJ later down the line on an internet show on Fox.
Right, yes, on the Strategy Room. And I see you also have links on your website for there, so you must like that as well. Have you ever been on the Strategy Room?
Yeah, a lot. I was there when it was first conceived, so to speak, in the elections.
Right.
It was one of the hottest internet shows. They were really paying close attention to the elections that year.
Yeah. So let's find out a little bit about you, Noel. You're a Republican consultant and strategist. What does that mean? What do you do?
Well, what that means is I have clients that run for U.S. congressional, U.S. senatorial, presidential, gubernatorial, and I tell them how to raise funds, and then I go obtain the funds for their campaign on specific issue-oriented causes.
Right.
Meaning, if I have a guy that's going to run for U.S. Senate, and since taxes or no taxes are very popular, I'll get a group of men and ladies together that want to reduce taxes and have them throw an event for a candidate.
I see. Okay, so well, it seems like you're doing quite a bit of work there. And so have you always been a staunch Republican, or have you moved over to the right over your life, during
you
your life?
You mean the left?
Yeah.
You mean the left?
Yeah.
No, you're on the right now.
Yeah, but you said moved over.
From the left to the right.
Okay.
Go ahead. I mean, did that ever happen, or were you born a Republican?
You know what? That is the funniest thing I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I think I was born. Well, you know what? I was born in Chicago, Illinois. So does that make me kind of a pre-registered Democrat in Chicago's top politics?
Maybe.
Or a moderate, because I'm in the middle.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? So, Noelle, maybe we can get on the topic here, because we started having a heated conversation on spanking kids. And, you know, you're conservative and stuff. Give us your opinion on this. What do you think?
Well, you know, there's a couple things to look at. You know, as far as being a conservative, when it comes to your children and discipline, you're probably going to do what it takes to make sure that that child is in line. Now, when I say that, I don't mean that I'm a fan of vigorous spanking of a child, but I do think that maybe a little pat in order to get them to pay attention, sometimes you just have no choice. I mean, have you ever been in an airport and you see a child just screaming and on the floor and throwing a tirade? How do you propose to speak calmly and rationally to a two-year-old?
Yeah.
You can't. Because they're very demonstrative. I mean, they're going to scream. They're going to... So how... Their reasoning process is probably not very formed
right
at 1, 2, 3 years old.
Right. But, I think if the kid has gotten to that point to display that kind of behavior, I think the parent had something to do with it.
No, but two years old, it's natural to throw fits. So, I mean, the thing is it's not that the parents are total a-holes. It's that the kids are terrible twos. They're terrible twos. That's what they do. They want what they want when they want it. They don't understand waiting. They don't understand mommy has to do this first and I'll help you. And that's where I think spanking, again, like I agree with her, not vigorously, not excessively, can be used in the right context as a tool to really get them to kind of, you know, act right in the moment.
Well, let me say something. I mean, do you know any child that's grown up and is an adult now that's been spanked and it has scarred them for life? I mean, I was kind of tapped on the behind every once in a while as a child. I'm totally fine. I mean, I'm not marred by that and carry, you know, a chip on my shoulder, or, you know, when I see a child being spanked, go into some, you know, kooky memory. I mean, it really doesn't do much.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I think to me that's a signal of... you know, just like when adults, you know, I mean, when do you resort to violence? When you can't resolve the problems by talking and
but
by negotiating.
Well,
no,
but
it's not violence.
But spanking is violence.
No, I mean, not the intensity of it, but there's a definite intention there to make yourself heard. And if it's not going to happen through talking, then you're going to raise your hand on them.
But I think what we're doing is we're trying to villainize parents and saying that they're ignorant, they don't know how to raise their kids, and that they don't have the right to use physical discipline at all. And if they do, then they're stupid. And that's just not the case. I think every child's different, and I think there's a context for it. And again, I think it's tough love in times. And I think just loving your kids all the time. I mean, I've seen so many spoiled brats in this town, and because the parents are checked out and nobody's disciplining them on any level. And I think, you know what? Go on.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, look at grounding. I mean, grounding, if you want to get real absurd, is physical discipline, because you're physically imprisoning someone in the house. They can't leave. I mean, they might as well have a bracelet on that taps.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. So you're doing something physical no matter what. And you know what? Sometimes mental abuse is worse. What if a parent threatens, like verbally threatens a child? Like, if you do this, you will never achieve. You're a loser if you cry and you're this and you're that. I mean, what would you rather have?
I know, that's more detrimental, actually.
Yeah, but you wouldn't say that to a 2-year-old.
No, people do that. Maybe not to a 2-year-old, but there's a lot of stuff where I knew a woman that she would tell her kids, and I don't agree with this, but she would say, if you don't act right, I'm going to turn you into the police. Mm. And these are kids.
Yeah. That's horrible.
That's awful, because you want them to have a healthy understanding and a healthy kind of fear for the police and know that they're there to help, and not that, you know, you have to be afraid of them in that regard. And I mean, there's a lot of mental abuse and emotional abuse that, you know, I think is, you know, and I think that there's something to be said for abusing your kid by being apathetic.
Right.
And not
I do too.
Yeah. And just not being checked in. I used to be a nanny, Sam, for a few families, mm-hmm. and it was the most frustrating thing to raise other people's kids and not have any ability to discipline them. I mean, I did with timeouts and stuff, and not that I wanted to hit them. I probably wouldn't have spanked them, even if I could, but that I didn't see the parents being consistent. I didn't see the parents participating in those actions,
right.
Even if it wasn't.
Okay, so you're arguing my point, and that is that I think if a person takes the time and learns how to discipline their kids and stuff, then you don't get to that point where you need to spank them.
I'm just saying there are circumstances where it can be effective.
Okay, so we'll agree to disagree. Noelle, I wanted to ask you, what's wrong with our government today? Go ahead.
Loaded! Because the government's not allowed to spank their kids! The government needs to get spanked.
Would you let me... Exactly.
Hello?
Whoops. Great disciplinary measure right now.
Yeah.
You know, I think what's wrong is the same thing around...
She's cutting
we
out,
were
huh?
so sick of the...
Noelle?
Spending.
Noelle, hold on a second. You're cutting out. Let me... let me try and call you right back, okay? I have your number here, so I'll call you right back.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Okay, yeah, she started cutting out, and we're missing all the important things that she's saying. So let's see. I mean, that sometimes happens. So we're talking to Noelle Nickpour, of course, and she's from Arkansas, Republican strategist. And we're going to talk about what's wrong with our government as soon as she answers. Noelle, you there?
Yeah.
Oh, there you are. It's still a terrible connection. I don't know what happened. But we're missing what you're saying. Go ahead. Can you repeat what you said?
Well, I think that as a government, I think that it's a repeat of what they were upset with the Bush administration for spending, overspending, grossly overspending. And this is exactly what Obama's done. And really, if you think about it, you cannot spend your way out of a recession. Look, I mean, the country's broke, and we still don't have jobs.
Right.
I don't see where the government has achieved any blue ribbons here.
Right. Do you think that the government can actually turn the economy around? I mean, that's a little giving them a little too much credit, wouldn't you say?
Well, I mean, really, do you think? I mean, you're smart. You've got your own radio show.
Well,
you're hearing people calling
smart.
In, and I mean, do you really think that the government can turn this thing around?
No, I don't.
I do. Do I even think that it's their responsibility to turn it around? Mm-hmm. I mean, other than managing...
I think they owe it to the American people to turn it around, but as far as turning it around, look. I mean, look at the Postal Service, look at Amtrak, look at every darn thing they've gotten their hands on, and they've ruined it. And plus, look at the health care. What in the holy heck is the student loan deal doing in the health care bill? What does that have to do with
Tell
anything?
Tell us about that. What's going on? Is this one of those things they tacked on that we didn't know about?
Yeah. I mean, what is that in? You know, they said no more pork, transparency. Why are all these things hidden in the health care bill? I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So there are a lot of things like that in the health bill, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they never took the $300 million Louisiana purchase out that the Mary Landrieu got from Louisiana. I mean, look at that. I mean, right. That's Chicago-style pay-to-play politics right there alive and well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, one thing that makes me wonder is I don't hear them talk a lot about pulling out of Afghanistan and Iraq and stuff. I mean, I remember those were part of the promises that Obama made, is we're going to be pulling out of there. Now they're increasing the number of troops down there. What, you know, I mean, do you think we're ever going to get out of there?
Well, you know what? Some people voted on the fact that Obama was going to pull our troops out of there. You know, and he put 30,000 more troops in Afghanistan, and he's not pulled out all the way of Iraq. And, you know, a lot of these are broken promises. So for the boys and girls that voted for Obama to end the war, I mean, that's a sad situation. It's a lost vote, in my opinion, for those people that voted on him for that issue.
I mean, I'm not pro-war. Who is pro-war? But I think this is...
Nobody.
Nobody's pro-war. I mean, it's just... But the situation over there is one of those that, I mean, even Democrats are going, well, I mean, even the Obama's realizing he can't do that. If he does that, I mean, that the situation's going to be worse if we were
to
pull out.
Yeah, I mean, we can't go into a country, disrupt it, take over, and then go see you later, and then have all the havoc happen to the people there. We morally can't.
More people are going to die if we leave.
We can't just pull out.
Right.
If we leave, more people die. And we don't talk about that.
Yeah,
talk about, oh, this is violent. Well, yeah, and they're talking about the American people. But more people are going to die if we leave. And then the aftermath of what that's going to mean as a threat to our country. And I it does suck. There's no way for it to not suck.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah, but you are so right.
But
you're
It can't happen that every time we go into a country, we just stay there indefinitely. That's not an answer
well,
either.
Well, that's not normally what we do. We're the only country, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, in history that has had wars with countries, and then guess what? We build back their country, and we say, here you go, here's your country back. Mm-hmm. And if we do, we leave a base there, but we rebuild their country. And show me in history where other
that's
countries...
That's America's reputation. You're right. Right there, what you stated. That's our reputation, is do-gooders. We'll go in there and cause a mess, but we'll clean it up, and we'll leave it a better place than we found it.
Right.
But I mean, what I'm finding in LA, and there's very international here, is more people that aren't from America going, we love America, and not because we're perfect, not because we're perfect, but more people that are more in tune to people that are overseas that are happy that our troops are there, and it's not it's not like we're trying to Americanize them and we're trying to make them into the U.S., but you know, trying to bring some kind of stability over there. I mean, and some people think some people think it's, you know, a lost cause, but the reality is like you said, we're already you know, our foot's already in the door. We can't pull. You know what I mean? It's too late. We either should have not have gone.
Yeah, but you know what? We've been there for years. We can't seem to win this war. So my question is this. I mean, is it acceptable that we'll be there for another 10 years?
I don't know. But let me ask you then, Sam.
Yes.
If we leave, if we leave and we go, okay, wiping our hands.
Right.
Clean,
there's going to be vacuum there.
Okay, but what do you think is going to happen if that happens?
Yeah. Well, there's going to be vacuum, and then you're going to have hostile powers going in and taking over, just like we've seen in Lebanon. And, you know, but look, there's no easy answers, but we also have to help install a government there and let them handle their own problems.
But they're trying to do that. They're
Yeah, but I mean, we can't stay there forever either.
You're right. I mean, you're absolutely
right. These are our
right.
boys out there, and some of them don't even understand what they're fighting for. Noelle?
Yeah, you go for it.
Well, I mean, Sam, I do think that you're right. You know, both of you guys bring up very good and valid points, but a fact is a fact is a fact. We are there now. and we cannot leave them high and dry. We can't just pull out. And it will, and Sam, you're right, it's going to cause us a lot of problems if we do that back home on American soil.
Right.
Well, I mean, I have to agree with you, and I find it that it's like you said, Sam, it sucks either way. You know, it's kind of like we're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Either we should have never gone in there, but at this point, what are you going to do? And I don't know. I think it's like if we care about humanity on any level, like it can't just be about the U.S. troops, although we have a priority to them, but it's also like it's like leaving in a huge mess. And so I think what Noelle's saying is that here are the people that did vote for Obama on the basis of him pulling out, and she's saying right. I sympathize with them because clearly that he can't do that.
Exactly. You know, and I feel cheated.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, think about it. If you voted for all the things that Obama stood for, which, you know, at the time, he was, you know, he was the hope. He was the change. He right. was, you know, get rid of Bush, get him out of here. He's mm-hmm. a spendthrift, and he's a warmonger. Let's get this guy out of here. Well, you got Obama, who, you know, I'm happy he sent 30,000 troops to Afghanistan, but
it's still not enough.
Talk about the liberal voter. Yeah. The liberal voter got sold a bag of goods that was BS. Look, I mean, he's kept troops in war. He has taxed. He didn't even give the health care bill what it was supposed to do, which was a public option, which is what the Democrats, even Jay Rockefeller said, I can hardly stand with the president on this health care bill because it does not have the public option. Even Nancy Pelosi, this is his base, and the base even separated. So for the voter that voted for Obama for all the bag of goodies he promised, they got sold down the river.
Yes.
Well, I think it's like you're saying. You know?
Yeah, no, I have to agree. I mean, I feel that way. I voted for Obama simply because I you know, after 8 years of George Bush, mm-hmm. I had to try something else, you know, and, you
right.
know, I was very displeased with him. And,
right.
you know, and like you said, you know, Obama did promise change and hope and all that. And it turns out to be just another politician doing what he wants to do.
And
why do you guys think that in 2010... And in 2012, that the GOP, that the Republican Party's got a shot at winning it, is because Obama is even upsetting his base. Yeah. Some moderate voters, some people that voted in Republican races, they switched over for the first time in their life, and they voted for Barack Obama.
Right.
Now, if you look at it, these people are furious. They're like, he didn't do anything that even close to what he says. So for the first time, I'm an independent voter. I vote for the man. I'm actually going to look on the other side.
Right.
Yeah. Well, like, I guess, too, going back to the health care bill, I mean, I find that it's the mandate part. Here's what I'm finding, Noelle, and I'm no genius, and I'm open to being wrong. God knows I've gotten my emails. But got some emails, and I'm open to being wrong and to look deeper and to get educated. But the reality is I find I'm talking to people, and they don't know anything about what's going on. And if I know more than you, then there's something wrong. Because I'm telling I'm telling people about, oh, you know, you're gonna have to pay into it. You're gonna be penalized. There's a mandate on this health care bill, and people are like, no, that's not true. They're like, no, it's not true.
Does that make sense? I mean, think about it. I'm some guy out here, and I'm working. I can hardly pay my bills. It's a recession going on, and I don't have health insurance. And in 2014, when supposedly this takes effect, I'm going to get financially penalized for this. And guess what? The IRS is the one who's friggin' mandating it, which means the IRS, if I have a little small eensy-weensy refund that I'm supposed to get that's really going to help me and my family, I'm probably going to have $700 taken out of my refund. I mean, how in the heck is that helping
me? It doesn't.
Me?
And do you know what's really interesting is that they have a radio clip of or audio clip of Barack Obama, when he was still in the running for presidency and he was debating on Hillary Clinton and how she wanted health care, he specifically talked about Massachusetts, and he talked about in order to get the people to pay, you have to make hard penalties on them in order to make them to pay.
Yeah.
And then the people that couldn't afford it in the first place are now worse off because they can't pay.
Right.
He's like the people that don't have health care.
Girl, I'm
And then this is exactly what he's doing.
Look, I mean, that is unconstitutional. Why do you think we're having lawsuits? You can't force a private citizen to buy something from a private company.
It's a monopoly. Isn't it like a monopoly? I thought we were against monopolies.
Yeah, you're right. And I mean, look who's enforcing it, the IRF. How popular is that mess?
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, something I want to say, and I've heard people say this, and it makes a lot of sense, is that we have 307 million Americans, and not all 307 million Americans can't afford their health care. We should really focus on the people that can't afford it and don't mandate people that can't afford health care and that want to do it, you know, through different private companies. Don't include them in it. Don't force them to buy into this.
Right.
Well, and I mean, Sam, let me ask you guys, what was so wrong with the Republicans' idea of going across state lines and buying insurance, open up the competition?
That's healthy,
is it not?
Yeah, yeah. So why do you think the Democrats defeated that?
I just think it was wrong. I mean, they didn't want it, and they really never gave any solid information on why, other than saying that different states require different health care requirements in order to place their insurance, which... who knows? I mean, I'm not an insurance. I'm a political strategist. I mean, you know, you do radio. I mean, who knows if that's true? I don't know the ins and outs of insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, that's one of those things. They said if they opened it up against, you know, state lines, would have really increased healthy competition within the private sector.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I guess I feel like there is a malaise in some ways. I mean, especially being in Los Angeles, where people just, you know, anybody can say hope and change. Anybody could say this.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's about being a celebrity or something.
Yeah, and I think...
hype. Yeah. And you didn't really get much. You got a bunch of hype.
Mm. Right. Yeah. Well, Noelle, I mean, this is very fascinating. We should have you on regularly, you know, and maybe we'll talk about that and stuff so you can give us some opinions, because I think you're very sophisticated in your opinion and you know what's going on, and I think that's rare. You know, a lot of people just talk.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Of course. So, of course,
a lot of people listening. A lot of people listen. This may be the first time that they hear about something that's hidden in.
Yeah.
You know what? And they're going to go home maybe and get online and go, man, I heard this on Sam's show and get.
Yeah.
I want to see if this is. What's going on here?
Yeah. No, exactly. And to stimulate conversation, I think that's important. Everybody go to Noelle-Nikpor, and that's Noelle-Nikpor.com. And you have a blog as
well.
Absolutely. Yes, you have a blog that we can go to from there. And I see I went over it last night, and it seems pretty interesting. I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff on there. So, Noelle, thank you so much for giving us your time this morning. And,
all right. Thank you.
All the best to you. We'll
talk
to you again soon.
Thanks, Noelle. I really appreciate it.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
And bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. Wow, the connection just...
That was kind of the time to wrap it up, I guess.
Yeah, you know, when the connection starts, you know, it's this technology.
Mm.
What are you going to do?
She's cool. How did y'all meet?
Through publicists.
Oh, really?
Yeah, cool. She was actually in town last year.
Uh-huh.
So she came in, and one of her... the things about her is she's very hot as well. She's a model, too.
Oh, really?
Believe it or not.
So Sam's like, just like, let's get her in on the show. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
That is funny. What's her name? Noelle what?
Yeah. Nikpor. We've got another phone call here. Let's see who that is. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Wow. You just called up and you're right on the air.
Yeah. There you go. You see?
Hey, you guys were talking about, you know, why they don't want to open up the healthcare across state lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some questions. I thought about that.
Okay, go ahead. What is your first name?
It's Danny.
Danny. Okay, go ahead.
Well, obviously the Democrats shot that down. And for the main purpose of this is that if we across state lines, it's going to really, really increase competition for that service. Mm-hmm. And healthcare companies will have to improve. They'll have to innovate. They'll have to reduce costs. They have to be better at what they do, and Democrats know that. Politicians, they do know that as much as anything else. And what they would overall perspective, it would compete with the agenda for a national health care plan.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well,
would be one explanation.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, people try to impose on us their opinions and what, you know, and I think there is no explanation as to why we're not opening up.
Well, that's the question, is why not? Not why, how it could be good. We see the benefits, but we're asking, why hasn't that happened? What are they protecting? Hello?
Danny?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Yeah. I would have no idea what would they care. I don't understand your question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Danny, thank you so much.
What would they be protecting by not opening it up? They'd be protecting the interest of the government running this health care plan.
Right. Okay. So
that's the main goal. This whole agenda from the Democrats' side of the political spectrum, from Obama all the way down. You know, most of them, I know all of them, but most of them, has been this healthcare plan.
Right.
And so anything that would even sniff at a competition for this plan to go through, they're gonna reject it.
Yeah.
And the Republicans obviously want it. They obviously want to have, you know, competition among healthcare companies. It would just make it better. And I don't know what anybody would. I'm telling you, I don't know why someone would come in and say, you know, the government running the healthcare would be a better solution than a private company. Look at what does the government do well,
That's true. You're absolutely right.
We're probably pretty good at executing wars. I know Vietnam wouldn't be a good example of that.
Yeah.
But you know, what is it that we've What is it that the government does well? I mean, they're obviously not very good financial managers.
Right.
If you look at national deficit, you look at the budget, you look at what's, you know, the excesses that run in government on that perspective.
Right.
They're easy to poke at because they're big and they're a target for everybody. But I just, having it to where there is no other solution other than, oh yeah, well the solution then is we just sweeping across the board, you know, spend all this money, spend, $900 billion, almost $1 trillion, to make the solution happen. We have to do something. We have to help people.
Right.
You know, okay, yeah, that's great. And I think Darren made a good point. You know, well, let's just help the people that need the freaking help or that would qualify for it. You know, I'm sorry. There's people there that are really just looking for a handout, and I don't want to be culpable for those folks.
Right, and you seem to voice, I think, the majority of the people. And thank you so much for your opinion, Danny.
Thanks for calling
in.
Thanks for listening.
Okay, well, he's gone. Okay, so do you think your guest is here?
Well, let's go for a break. Let's find out.
Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be back right after this.
Listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
radio proliferates the internet, two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Tara in the morning, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, the guest is not here yet. Hopefully she'll be here in a few minutes.
It'll happen.
So now, after all the problems of Toyota, now they're saying that the Lexus have some problems too.
Oh, crap.
They found out
really?
That their SUV has a rollover risk, and this is from Consumer Reports.
You know, it's just not a good year for them.
No, it's not a good year. Man. I mean, can you imagine now Lexus owners have to worry about their cars as well?
Well, they just got hit with a $16.7 million fine.
Right.
But they said, you know, that's like a parking ticket pretty much because that's the price of doing business. But that it's kind of over the idea that they waited too long to report the other incidents.
Right.
With the other cars. What were the other cars?
The Toyotas, the Prius, and most of them actually, the ones with the accelerator. And now this is a rollover risk, and you know you can expect everybody to really tear Toyota apart now and test all their cars inside and out, you know. And the amazing thing is Toyota has become the number one automaker in the world, and now you know they're in the spotlight, they're under the gun, and
I wonder how you bounce back from something like that.
Yeah.
Sorry, our cars almost got you in a bunch of accidents. I'm sorry that it just isn't worth. I'm sorry that you lost your kid, but hey, give us a try again. I mean, you know, I'm all for second chances, but that's hard. That's a hard one to bounce back. What do you think?
Well, there are a lot of people that are considering or actually already are suing Toyota for for accidents that happened and you know where people died.
Were there deaths?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, there were deaths, of course. That's why they brought it up in the open, you know.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, they've been deaths.
Hmm.
Yeah. So
wow.
Michelle Obama made an unannounced visit to Haiti.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Is she?
She took a helicopter tour of the earthquake-shattered capital.
Hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's like now we forget about the earthquake and everything. We continue our lives, but they're still stuck there, you know, with all the destruction and everything.
I wonder how it is going over there. I've heard it's not a lack of money that was the issue.
I mean,
it was just the fact that they were just destroyed on every side.
Yeah.
And that, you know, getting people over there, I mean, people for those crucial first, you know, few days and those first few weeks, I mean, people were dying from preventative issues because they couldn't even get... You know, people over there.
That's the thing, is that usually the problem with aid is that it's not distributed well, you know, and I think that was the problem this time.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know it's not good.
Yeah. There's a picture of Conan O'Brien here with a beard. Did you see that he grew a beard? Do you think I should grow a beard?
No, don't.
Like a
just
goatee or something?
No, just stick with the blonde. I also think, too, that I think that the beard thing, I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys look good with a little 5 o'clock shadow. Some guys, you know,
Do you like goatees for the most part?
I'm not big on facial hair, but there's been some situations where, you know, guys will have some scruff or something, and it can look kind of sexy, kind of like a bad boy. But I don't really like too much man face hair.
Right.
It just starts to look like pubes to me.
Really?
You know those guys that get the Fu Manchu, they get like that, they get that big bush at the end of their chin, and it just kind of grows. And then the ends of the hair are kind of like see-through wispy, and it looks scraggly. I'm just like, all I think of is bush.
Yeah.
And it's nasty.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to kiss somebody with that.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about facial hair either.
Yeah.
And it seems like for the most part, most people, most men, I think, do not have facial hair. Where it used to be like everybody had a mustache.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like a lot of men, they do, you know, they get like that beard and they're just kind of like, oh, quirky beard. They call it the writer's beard or whatever. And I'm just like, I don't know. There's just something really sloppy about it. But I mean, some guys pull it off and it looks sexy.
Yeah.
And the 5 o'clock shadow looks good. And I had a boyfriend that at one point, he did grow out some of his, he had a goatee and he kind of grew it out a little bit. He looked like a serial killer actually because he like shaved his head and had a goatee and wore a beanie.
Really?
He looked like he was going to steal your car or something.
Yeah.
But I remember one time we were kissing and it's not comfortable on your face, yeah. especially because women's faces are soft. You know, right. it's like you finish kissing, you're like, yeah, that was good, and you're like, like your face is all red and breaking out.
Yeah.
But I will say one time, I don't know what it was, but there's like a scent in his hair.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of turned me on, like, you know, kissing and smelling, I don't know. Like
really?
The skin and the oil in the hair.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just nasty.
Does it smell like balls to you?
I don't go around sniffing balls.
Yeah.
So.
But you claim that you know what it smelled like.
All I'm saying is I had brothers. And
yeah.
my brothers in their bedroom, it just smelled musky. And it smelled like butt musk or something. It just had a different scent. You know, girls can smell too, but
yeah.
it's just different, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
So... Anyway, yeah. I think our guest may be here. Let me go check.
You think she is?
Yeah, I heard the door.
The door?
Yeah, let me go check.
Okay. Well, we'll take just a short break. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Above and beyond. on Sam and Karen in the Morning. Pick up your phone and jump in on the conversation. Dial 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815 and get in on the fun. Now, let's get back to Sam and Karen in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
All right, no guests yet.
Well, you know what? She's stuck in a traffic jam. Here's the thing. I heard the best song.
Yeah.
It's called Blame It on L.A.
Yeah.
And this guy, I can't remember his name, but he was singing it, and he's like, when you're something, something, and you can't get there on time, blame it on L.A.
Yeah, there you
go. When you don't make any
friends. Blame it on the traffic.
I mean, it's because it is true.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you just kind of know it's always going to be there.
I just think that what we should do with her is invite her at 9, and then she'll get here at 10.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is that I'm the person that's always late, so I can't get too up in arms, you know?
Yeah, you can. You can.
You're so
funny. You know, somebody's coming to be a guest on the show, I think. You know, they should try to be here on time. I mean, I'm not going to give her a hard time or anything, but I just have a problem with people that run late.
I know. You're pretty good on being on time.
Oh, yeah. Always. Always. I don't care how far I have to drive. I always figure enough time, and I make it there right on time.
We're all different types of people.
Yeah.
Well, listen.
But I'm just saying that if you're a person that doesn't estimate time very well, you should give yourself a little extra time. That's all I say to people that are late.
Listen. So.
Yes.
I forgot to talk about this, but I submitted my photos, some modeling photos for a casting.
Uh huh.
And it was to be a cover model. I wouldn't go in to do a shoot. They would just use my existing photos to promote a publication in L.A. Well, they actually called me up and they said, hey, we really like your photos. We'd like to use you as the cover model for like a L.A. Weekly type thing.
And where did they find you?
I was through a casting. I submitted.
I see. Yeah. You did submit.
I submitted for
okay.
it.
Okay.
And I was like, woohoo, that's cool. You know, I mean, I don't consider myself a model, but I have really great photos. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let's make some cash off these things, you
right.
know? So they wanted to use them, and they said, well, we'll do a little 200-word little article on you, and it'll be kind of in the middle of the publication. Right. And I was like, cool, sounds great. And what's the name of it? The publication is called L.A. Express.
Oh.
And I was, yeah, he knows. He's already laughing.
I know L.A. Express.
I didn't know it. And I said, oh, well, what's it like? They said, well, it's kind of like L.A. Weekly.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, cool. Well, so then I sent him my photos, and then they're like, well, we're sending over the model release form. I said, great, let's do it. And thank God I stopped to get the publication, I mean, to see what it was.
Right.
It's like Trashy R Us, and it's not that sleazy, but it's pretty much sleazy.
What is it, like personal ads for
It's okay, they start
like massage
pretty much it's all the seedy like personals. Like, first of all, I don't get people that actually, hey, I got an idea, I'm going to put a personal ad out of me and my tacky Target zebra little nighty, and, you know, be like, hey, call me for a good time. And these people are, I guess it's just prostitution, right?
Probably.
It's prostitution, but they kind of.
I can't imagine a woman that would put an ad.
But they do it in a way that is subtle, so not subtle, but, you know, sneaky,
right.
so that they can't get, I guess, charged for it.
Right.
But they also, he said, oh, well, we have the same ads as LA Weekly. And they did have some news in there. I mean, they had some pop culture news and stuff, but it presents itself as predominantly an adult classifieds. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I was like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
You know, and they were going to pay me. It wasn't like a whole lot, but it would have been, you know, it would have been decent. And I was like, this is hysterical, because he tried spinning it like, no, it's this, it's that, it's this. And the girl they had on the cover, she just wasn't looking hot. She looked like she'd been in a brothel or something, and she was recovering. And I was like, and my photos look good.
Yeah.
I mean, I even would like to look like my photos, because they're really good. So it doesn't, my photos aren't like me, like humping a light post and being like, hey, for a good time, call me. I mean, I don't know why they would even, you know, want to use my photos.
Yeah.
Because they don't look like that.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe they found something in there they like. You know? But,
I don't know.
But I think, I agree with you. You shouldn't do it.
Well, I'm not going to do it.
You shouldn't do it, yeah.
Come on now.
It's definitely not going to help your career.
No, anyway. Nobody of anything. What am I going to do? You put that on my website as press? Hey, I was an XLA Express. And I feel kind of dumb, because I didn't know about it, and everybody
That's
else.
That's okay. I mean, you're not supposed to. You're not the target market for this thing.
How did you know about it?
Because they have those boxes all over the place.
They do.
On the streets.
They do.
Yeah. So you can't miss it, even if you want to. I never looked at one, but, you know, I mean, you can see from the cover and stuff that it probably has like massage parlor ads and, and escort services and things like that.
I know. I was just like, really? Come on now. My photos don't even look like that. So
So what did you do? You called them and you
I
said
I called them back and said, listen, thanks for the offer, but I just looked at the publication. It's nothing that I would feel comfortable being a part of. He says, well, we're like LA Weekly. No, LA Weekly covers – LA Weekly has an adult section, but it also has music and upcoming events and concerts and comedy and awesome thing. It's very – it covers the social –
it's different. It's
different. It's the social and cultural aspect of LA, and you can find out what's coming up. I mean, that would be something cool to be a part of. In fact, Melinda is just written up in LA Weekly for her upcoming show tomorrow on Comedy Central, the Comedy Central stage that she's doing. She's having a live taping of her show. It's called Accidentally Bisexual. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
You're going to love it, Sam. You're going to love it. You're like, ooh, yeah.
Is she bisexual?
I don't. I think it's just the glitch. It's the niche. She said that she was walking and she was next to this lesbian and they both slipped on some cart fell over. They both slipped and they ended up in the scissor position.
I see. So that's where the name came from.
Accidentally Bisexual. Yeah. And kind of a spoof. I think it's kind of also has something to do with the I Kissed a Girl type thing from Katy Perry and all that stuff.
Yeah, people are into that stuff.
Yeah, but she was the LA Weekly comedy pick for this week. So that's really,
really?
Cool. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And she's been featured in the LA Examiner and Bazine. And she's also been on, I believe, Craig Ferguson. Mm-hmm. The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson. Is that the one you don't like?
Conan.
Conan.
I don't even know Ferguson.
Yeah, well, she's on the Late Late Show with him. And she's just doing her thing. She's totally funny. And, again, I'm really jealous of her hair. So you'll see when it comes
in. Really? She's got nice long hair?
Beautiful blonde hair.
Really?
Just so Goldie Hawn. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Hater, hater, hater. Anyway, so I had to have my hair ready today.
I see.
But I have a meeting, which is why I took a shower.
Yeah. Your weekly one?
You know what? The other day I was like, oh, it's yearly laundry day. Watch out. I had three big trash bags of laundry. And you don't mess around when you've got that kind of laundry. You go to the turbo laundromat and you sit there next to the person doing crack and you stuff it all in there and you try not to make eye contact. No, it's funny. The laundromat is an interesting place where so many different people kind of intersect.
Right.
And a lot of students were there, a lot of Hispanic families. And I noticed that there's a lot of kids helping their mom do laundry. I thought that was cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like these young Hispanic kids were like putting in the laundry detergent and watching it, and
that's
I was like,
good.
I thought
put
that's
your kids
cool.
To work, you know?
Make them get it in their system young.
Yeah, have them earn it.
Get it in their system young. And so another coffee shop venture. Ready?
Mm-hmm. Oh, another one.
Another
now.
One. Okay. And I'm telling you, coffee shops are a good way to meet people. They really are.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you can.
If you're Kara.
Well, I meet people anywhere, but...
Because I go there all the time and never meet anybody.
Well, sit down with your coffee and, you know, if there's somebody cool next to you, talk with them.
I see. Okay.
But, I mean, it's not to hook up. It's just meeting people. Mm-hmm. So, but this time, I met a man yesterday, and he was... When I say older, he was older.
Right.
Like gray hair older. Mm-hmm. But he still had, like, a youth about him, and he was still... kicking, and he had charm and wit, and we just had the best conversation for about, I mean, I was there for about an hour, so almost the whole time.
Really?
And we just had a great conversation, and this is going to sound bad. Mm-hmm. It's going to sound bad, and I understand, but I'm like, I was kind of attracted to him.
So why does it sound bad?
Because it's just the fact, Sam, that this man is more than twice my age. I mean, I like older men, but they're usually still attractive, young-looking in some way.
How do you know how old he was? Did he tell you?
No, but, you know,
just
he
the
looked...
Way he looks?
I'm just saying, he's an old man.
So he looked like in his 50s?
No, older than that.
Oh, I see.
Like 60s, late 60s.
Wow.
Yeah, but
and
I got to
attracted,
tell,
huh?
Well, it was more of like, not like, could I see myself making out with him? No. But I felt like really appreciated when I was talking to him, and we had great conversation. I was like, you know, who says that I'm not that I'm going to date the guy, but I'm just like, we have all these kind of social restrictions on that kind of stuff, but I have the best conversations with older men.
I see.
I just do.
Yeah.
Guys my age, there's just so much, I don't know, there's just, guys, there's so much sexuality that's in the way. Like, they're always on a mission for sex that you can't, it might be fun for a little bit, but I'm not having great conversations about life and about dreams, about politics. I'm just not having those kind of conversations. And right. It seems like, isn't it, you know, I'm in the 60 plus range or, you know, 40s plus, I'm really having the better kinds of interactions and, right. and conversations. And I just think it's funny.
Yeah.
I was sitting there like,
well, it's funny, but maybe that's you, you know, I mean, you
I know, but isn't it?
It?
Isn't that well? I am. I mean, I think I think he's a cool guy. We may have coffee again in the future, and yeah. But isn't
so
that,
you exchange phone numbers?
He gave me his card.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And you're gonna call?
I sent him an email.
Yeah.
I said yeah because he lent me a CD, uh-huh. And I said cool. Like he's cool. He's lending me
a
CD.
Yeah.
We're you know lending me a CD, having a good time, and mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was totally funny.
Yeah.
I know, but isn't that? I came back and I was trying to tell my roommates, and my roommate, you know, Sarah, she just kind of looked at me like she's like, I just don't get it. I don't get it. Like, white. I don't know. Just everybody's an individual, and but that's not the first time. It doesn't happen often, but that's not the first time where I've met an elderly man who I could kind of look past the wrinkles mm-hmm. and see the young man in them still.
Right.
I still see that there's a guy in there kicking that wants to be alive.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was just thinking if he and I actually went out and, mm-hmm. you know, had drinks, I mean, it would just look absurd.
Yeah.
People would think I'm gold digging or people would think that I'm his kid or...
Yeah.
Or his grandkid.
All these things.
Like his grandkid.
Think, yeah, all these things people would think.
But isn't that interesting? Because there's a movie and I never watched it. I can't remember the name of it, but it was pretty much this love affair between a girl in like her 20s and this really older guy like in his 60s or 70s.
Yeah, with Jack Nicholson. Right? As good as it gets?
No, not that.
No?
It's a different one. But it was interesting because it was about their love affair. Kind of like they had a real... I don't even know if it ever got sexual, but it was just how these two people really had they explored this love that developed even though they were on such different generations and different times.
Yeah,
and
it probably can happen, you know? I mean, if the man is younger at heart and the girl is mature and that, I guess they can meet halfway, you know?
Yeah.
But in Hollywood, it happens a lot.
Well, it usually happens because it's fabricated and they want...
Not necessarily. Look at Harrison Ford and...
Calista Flockhart.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, look at them. They've lasted a long time and there's a big difference in the ages there.
Yeah, but
you know?
I don't know. That's not normative, I don't think. I mean, and what you see in L.A. when it comes to the age gap usually is generated because of financial gain.
Probably.
Know?
Probably. Or because someone's famous, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, look at, what's her name? Lara Boyle Flynn, who was with Jack Nicholson for a while.
Oh, she was?
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's a pretty big difference there, you know? But it's Jack Nicholson, for crying out loud. Who wouldn't go out with him, right? So that's what it boils down to. So, yeah, it's money, it's fame, it's... all of those things.
Yeah, I was just shocked. I was shocked that I was like, yeah, I'll go out for drinks with this guy. Wow. We haven't set it up or anything.
Yeah.
Again, I got to stop.
You ended up marrying this guy, and he's like 68.
No, because I don't think I could do something like that, because in 5 years, you know, I mean, it's like I have to take care of him.
And the kids are going to have such an old father, you know.
They won't have a father, you know. 10 years, 20 years down the road, they won't have a father. I don't know. I mean, you're not guaranteed anything in this life, so you never know when you're going to die.
Right.
But I just was more just... shocked by the fact that I felt such a great connection with this person.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you explain that one at your high school reunion? I'm having my high school reunion this year.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That'll be cool.
It's in September, and I don't know if I'm going to go to it, but it was one of these things where it was just like I can't see myself really you know, if I go, it's like we already have you know, Facebook. Why do you need to go to reunion?
Right.
You know?
Not quite the same, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I actually like gatherings where people haven't seen each other in a long time, you know? So, our guest is here.
She's totally here. And
okay,
she's coming
in right
now.
Coming in. Okay, it's taking like a whole thing there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I totally don't even understand how the whole... the high school reunion works with Facebook. It's just ridiculous. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Melinda, hi, girl. You can sit right here. We're so glad
welcome.
You came.
Check out her hair.
Yeah.
You
have
boxing.
Well, I had to do it because
hello, how are you, Melinda? Have a seat.
Dressed up for your radio show. show.
Well, actually, I have an interview. Not interview. A meeting afterwards where I have to look like I'm not homeless for once.
Bombshell.
But this one, you guys can't see.
Hi, Melinda. Get close to the mic.
Hi-oh.
There you go.
So we can hear you.
Some water for you,
and you finally made it.
Yes. I'm so sorry. The traffic. Traffic's a bummer in this town. It really is.
Yeah. Where did you have to drive from? Hollywood or something? Closer.
I'd rather not disclose that information.
Okay, then we're not going to disclose that information.
It's okay. She came from the crazy L.A. area. That's all that matters, right? That's all that matters.
I came from the next block over. I just... It took a while.
So how'd you guys meet?
Well, we're not besties, although I'd love to be your bestie. But no, I was in a coffee shop, I think I told you guys yesterday, and I was at the Bourgeois Pig, and I saw this awesome head of blonde hair, and I was like, who is that bitch? That is so not fair. And I was like, who is she? Because her hair is just like totally Goldie Hawn. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. And I was like, what's going on over here? So I just went over and said hello, and then you tell me you did comedy, and then I looked her up, and she's hysterical, and she's all over LA doing her thing. And we'll get to how talented you are in a second, but we talk about your gorgeous looks and being funny. Can we do that?
Well, I'm just doing the best I can, guys.
Really? You look great.
Everyone's just doing what they can.
That's true.
Just bringing the most we can to the table.
Yeah. But I think she must blow guys' minds because I've seen you do your thing. You're totally gorgeous. I know it's uncomfortable to have somebody else like be like, yes, I'm beautiful, but whatever, it's fine, let me do it. And I just wonder, do guys just totally like just trip over themselves or what? She's like, no.
Yeah.
I would think they would. They do.
I guess it all depends on how you look at it.
Really?
Yeah.
If I was a guy, I would be. Anyway.
How long have you lived in L.A.?
For about, I don't know.
5 years?
A long time.
A long time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where are you originally from? Back east? Midwest?
I moved here from Kansas.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. And what made you decide to move here? Were you always like an artist that you wanted to be here?
Yeah. I always... I've studied fiction writing and theater in college, mm-hmm. and so I did like a lot of, I did tons of plays, and I did plays in high school, and so yeah, I definitely wanted. I always knew I would do something with writing,
right,
and performing.
I see.
Probably.
Okay. So what do you write? Comedy?
Yes, I write comedy, short stories, scripts, my own stand up. Emails, updates.
Emails, that's creative.
I love that one.
Texts. Well, you name it. Yeah. I'm in the business
of
writing.
I love it. So Melinda has an awesome show. I was plugging it for you. It's Accidentally Bisexual. Totally read the synopsis.
It's actually The Accidental Bisexual.
Okay. The Accidental.
I like your version too, though.
No, that's better. Let's be more accurate.
Which one did you say?
Accidentally Bisexual.
Oh, I see. Okay. The accidental
Bisexual. Give us like kind of an overview of your show.
All right. Well, a record company wanted to do a comedy CD. They wanted me to do a comedy CD. So, they were thinking stand-up. And, I decided to do instead a CD of short stories, like funny short stories,
mm-hmm. right.
because I've just been writing so many of them over the last 2 years. I've been doing, tons of shows like Sit and Spin, mm-hmm. Which is an amazing show where you just read, short, funny, moving short stories. And, I've done tons of shows like Tasty Words and Lit Up and Wordplay and Literary Deathmatch. Just all these are all like story shows. It's just a mm-hmm. slightly different scene from the stand-up. But they took a long time to write, and they were all those shows gave me these great deadlines to write these great stories that don't really have a place in my stand-up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so. For a while, they've been, published in a few different magazines, mm-hmm. L.A. Innuendo, and one was in L.A. Weekly Comedy Issue last year, and Opium Magazine. But I wanted to put them all in a place where I could read them with my own delivery And I thought the CD was the perfect opportunity. So that's what the show is tomorrow night, is I'm just reading those short stories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I also did a show called Stories of a Girl Who Was in a Creed Video, directed by Tom Gianna.
Oh, yeah, that, yeah.
And it was also very, like, silly, you know, short stories, and I don't have any place to put those stories, so they're all going on this.
This is
CD.
Exciting. Now, I tried to RSVP. Is it too late? I kind of heard something on there like, "Good luck." I called to
well,
RSVP.
If it's sold out, that's pretty good.
It was sold out yesterday, and I know that like a few people have emailed me and said they couldn't make it. So I said, please remove your RSVP. So I think there might be like 5 seats left.
Because I want to come.
Please do, and I think if you call. Like immediately.
I called yesterday. I was like, hello, my name is Kara with LA Talk Radio, okay?
Mm-mm. Did you use that accent?
I didn't, but
did that get you in more doors?
I don't know. I just wanted to act like I had some girth going on, you know, like, let's do this. But no, I don't know. They were kind of like, yeah, so thanks for calling, but good luck. She's kind of a big deal, so honestly.
I'm sure you'll get in. If you call an RSVP, it's 323-960-5519. And also, you know, you can show up at 7:30, and if someone doesn't show up, you can get their seats.
Okay,
so
cool.
So that's the thing with the RSVPs, too, since it's a free show. Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah. What are the stories like? I mean, you tell a lot of stories and stuff. Give us an example. You don't have to tell the story, but what is it about?
Well, there's one called Hand Job Hamlet.
Mm-hmm. Get closer to the mic. We can't hear you.
There's one called The Hand Job Hamlet.
Hand Job Hamlet. Okay.
And it's a classic, and it's always a big crowd pleaser. And that's a shorter, punchier. There are some stories about dating. There are some stories about, various incidents. There's one story, love, loss. There's a story about a slutty friend who is a really crazy mean person. Mm. And
I think I know some friends like that. They call them frenemies. Like, I don't know why we're still going to clubs together, but I don't know. Go on though.
Yeah. So they're stories, and they're not they're not necessarily true. I mean, I'm sure they're true for someone, but I'm not. I don't stay married to, it's got to be autobiographical. Just because something happened to you, doesn't make it interesting. So yeah. I try to use what's interesting and right. Heighten the absurdity. I want people. I want
you're
to be
trying
like,
to entertain, right?
I want it to be like a painting, like art. Like people go, oh, I felt something. I laughed. I cried. I creamed my Twinkie. Whatever. I walked away. I don't know if it's true or not. I felt something. You know what I mean?
Good.
And that's what I'm going for. I'm not going for like this is about people that I, I'm not a mean spirit. I don't like to bash anyone. I'm not a celebrity.
I really respect that in stand up is when people actually novel concept get on stage and want to actually entertain people. And it not be like, who can be the bigger power-tripping a-hole? Like, I like it when people are like, hey, hope you laugh. Here we go. I think it serves the audience. Because believe it or not, like, not every audience person is some, comic sitting out there judging you. Some people really want to see it and laugh and freaking, enjoy themselves. And so I really appreciate people that are doing their thing and are actually super talented.
Right.
And she is. You are very, very funny. I've seen your stuff. She's so freaking funny.
Yeah.
So everybody check out Melinda Hill. And where are the different places that they can check you out?
Well, right now I would say hop on the Comedy Central stage show tomorrow night. RSVP now, 323-960-5519. To get in those last 5 seats. Get them while they're pancake hot. Other than that, I do Tiger Lily, every Monday night. It's at 8 p.m. Also a free show.
That's an awesome show. I want you to talk about that, too, because I really want people to know about these kind of, like, awesome things that are going on in L.A. that aren't necessarily on the – a little off the beaten path. I mean, Tiger Lily, I kind of stumbled upon it,
Yeah, it's – it did get a lot of – we've actually been doing it almost 4 years, mm-hmm. and – you know, it's it actually got a lot of press last year. Mm-hmm. It got written up in the Delta Sky magazine as, like, it was recommended comedy show mm-hmm. in L.A. They recommended shows in New York, L.A., and, like, all over the world, Chicago and Australia, et cetera. And it was recommended as one of the top four comedy shows in L.A., along with the Improv, mm-hmm. Comedy Death Ray, and or UCB.
UCB, yeah.
More specifically, and, like, something else major.
Which anyway, I agree. I totally agree. I love it.
Yeah. It's, so it is off the beat. And then it was also written up in LAist and in Buzzine, LA Examiner, all kinds of things, you guys. So yeah. We started to get, like, a lot, like, more on the map, but we've always been crowded from the start. So mm-hmm. it's like it's got a massive underground following. I mean, we just started it back, you know, 3.5 years ago to do new stuff, you know, do new jokes. I started it with Maria Bamford mm-hmm. and Natasha Leggero and in Los Feliz because we all just lived there. And we started it. I used to do food reviews for a magazine, and I asked them, one of the places that I had reviewed or featured, the column was called Hipsterific. Anyway, I asked them if I could do a comedy show there. So we were bringing in our own sound system. Like, Maria was bringing her karaoke machine, and our friend was bringing a work lamp for a light. Like, it was ridiculous. People were tripping over their work lamp light on the way to the stage. There was no stage, like, and every week they were yelling at us, you're not bringing enough money in here, you know what I mean? So it was like it was a journey to get to where the show is now, where we have a stage, an amazing lighting system, wonderful sound, whole entire parking lot of free parking, because we moved. Now we're at 6122 yes. Sunset.
It's a great spot.
Cross Street's Gower Gulch, or it's in the Gower Gulch, and it's awesome, and people love it. It's crowded every week. We're just really lucky. I mean, we don't have to charge a cover also, and we don't have, this restaurant isn't like, people need to order stuff to be here, you know what I mean? So it works
that
out. That
kind of sucks when you go to comedy clubs, you know? It's like they make you buy and buy and buy.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, they need to stay in business, and I understand that, but we are lucky that, you know, we have a situation where people can come in and out and leave when they want, and it's free, and it's free and easy, and everyone loves it.
Sounds good.
So, yeah, it's got a great lineup. Let me ask you, so doing stand-up, and then you were talking about transitioning kind of with your stories, and that there's stuff that you can't take into both worlds. What do you mean, like, by, do you have a more of a preference of where you feel more comfortable, or that you feel more artistically kind of driven, or is it just different muscles, or what?
Well, I love doing stand-up, and but my stand-up is more of a persona, of a sort of an oblivious optimist who, and everything is sort of filtered through that persona.
So you kind of take on a character.
Yeah, a person who, you know, I mean, the jokes are absurd.
They're hysterical. What's that one? I know, this is, I'm like the fan that's like, can you say that one? Do that one. But she does this one. Like, what is the one where you're like, somebody calls you, no, the boyfriend doesn't call you back, and what do you do with them?
Right. So if you go on a date with a gentleman, and then he does not contact you for 5 months, break up with him.
That's just like, I do what every normal girl does.
Yeah.
So it's this, you know, it's this oblivious thing that I love writing for that persona, and but that's a whole different thing than like stories that are you know, more, you know, so yeah, they're totally different. I mean, I have done, like, when I started headlining last year, I did have to fill an hour with something, so I would mix those two things, like the absurd one-liners and the stories, but now I just have so much material in both that I don't really have to do that, and I prefer not to, because they are
different,
very different.
Okay, cool.
Right. Now, do you find it hard for a female comic here, because I hear that a lot, in a male-dominated industry, let's say. Do you find it hard to break in?
I mean, I think there are pros and cons to everything, and it actually has not been difficult for me, because every show needs a token girl, and less girls do comedy. Well, I think when I started comedy, less girls did it, but now there are so many, and it hasn't really affected me, because I don't really do girl comedy material. I mean, I'm not really talking about, you know, dating and the morning after pill and
vaginas.
I don't know. I think I was real, you know, I tried to stay really like more neutral in my material and do more like
accessible for everybody type stuff.
Or? Yeah, accessible to both, you know, both genders. And that's why I really only do, you know, accessible material about my balls.
Yeah. How are your balls these days?
They're hanging in there.
Yeah.
They're hanging in there.
No, I don't know. You're always going to meet with opposition if you're a guy or a girl.
Yeah.
I mean, is it more difficult for a guy when there's 10 other guys trying to do it? I don't know.
I talked to Kathy Griffin and she said, I'm not I haven't, you know, climbed the comedy ladder as much, but she was saying that she said it used to be really, really tough for women, and she said they said it's better for them now, but she doesn't agree. She said because of the token girl, it's like, oh, well, we've got our one or two girls, we're done. And so it's like, and I've always experienced with being a woman, it can work for you and against you right at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it is the same way for men. I mean, I've not really thought of it like that, but my limited experiences, it's interesting. The culture is such a boys' club,
mm-hmm.
and I don't look like the quirky comedy girl with the ironic glasses, you know, and the crazy hair or whatever. I'm like, hey, boobies, and like, you know, and I don't know. I find that sometimes that it's a weird kind of club that is almost, you know, I don't know. I found it to be a little bit, the culture to be a little bit hard to penetrate. Not so much being on stage and doing it, but everybody's different and, you know, I don't know. That's what I've experienced. But
well, I think when I have met with opposition, it's only created more opportunities. It's forced me to create more opportunities for myself. Like, you know, if I had been getting booked on more shows, I certainly never would have started Tiger Lily, you know, and that's
so good. That's a good point, huh?
It's turned into, you know, a monster on its own, and it's been great, and I don't even have to, I mean, it's completely delegated now. We have a wonderful booker, Jazz Pons, who takes care of the entire booking, so I don't have to deal with that. She does the lineup. We have a great guy, Joe Pergola, who is also a comic, who's, you know, does the sound and lights people, so I get to just go and enjoy the show.
That's
sometimes
so awesome.
Perform, and it's like, it used to be a nightmare to have to do all that stuff. But anyway, so they're amazing. But what was my point? Oh, yeah. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I would never have started that show, and that was amazing. And then
that's a really good point.
Because of that, it made me, you know, people booking me, started booking me on tons of other things. Mm. But it's like, I've always found in LA that since I've been here, the more stuff I do on my own and don't wait for people, you know, that work begets work. And
I
when
so
I'm doing
believe
my own
that.
Thing, you know, plus I just love the opportunity to give so many people stage time and just start my own thing. But, you know, I think also, with the guy thing, oh, I was going to say something else, but
with the guy thing. That's okay.
So
that's okay. So, I mean, have you been like into funny all your life pretty much, or is this something you discovered later on?
Oh, this is what I was going to say.
Okay.
You came back.
I figured she's not listening to me.
It tripped me back in.
Yeah.
Go Where the Love Is.
That's beautiful.
Go Where the Love Is.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to get on some show and no one's booking you, or you feel like you're up against some group of people who aren't into you, great. Go
great.
Find the people who are. Go just find your people. That's all you have to do
good.
As an artist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Find the people who you resonate with.
I really
experienced
that.
She found them at LA Express, right?
Oh my gosh.
Those are your people.
Well, they're not getting any love.
Hey, now.
Girl, I was like, oh, maybe I'll come out with a magazine called LA Express and get my, you know, my photo on.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, that's not going to happen. No, I think that's a great message. And I've kind of in a position similar where I've started to realize that, you know, you just kind of have to work on the art and let, you know, if you build it, they will come kind of thing. And
exactly.
And, but it's interesting just along that path. That's what I've kind of felt and experience, because you kind of see it as, I think with a lot of stuff you kind of look at it and go, okay, well, this is the blueprint, quote unquote, or this is the way you think you should do it. You try your hand at it, and if, like you're saying, doors are closed, be unconventional and kind of, you know, create your own opportunities. And I think that that's a great message for people.
Yeah,
because I have a lot of friends too that are kind of hitting the brick wall with stuff and keep trying to
plug in.
Yeah, it's difficult. Look, I mean, there's so many people trying to do the same thing, you know, and this town is very populated and everybody wants to be somebody, you know. So, I mean, to stand out is really an accomplishment. I think, you know, when you manage
and
to.
And I think the way to do that, the only way to do that is be your authentic self.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, put out who you really are and just trust that your audience will find you. But, you know, you got to put it out there so they can find you, which involves not waiting around for people to give you that chance and, like, go
proactive.
Make your own stuff and get out in the world somehow.
I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
If they don't respond, you can always become a carpenter.
There you go. There's always something
good.
To go to.
I've heard
that's good. Wasn't Harrison Ford a carpenter before he became an actor?
I'm going to just go with it. Sounds right.
Yeah.
Sounds like you read
he
up
was,
on it.
He was, and, you know, I mean, he was able to make it, so why not?
I mean, it's interesting.
So do you have a website or anything people can go to? Or?
Yes. It's called MelindaHill.com.
Okay.
Check her out. She's hysterical. She's funny. She's doing her thing. She's creating. She's innovative. And she's got awesome hair.
All right.
Sorry,
well,
love your hair.
Melinda is looking at me like, what is she telling me? At any rate, Melinda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
A lot
for
of fun.
You.
Good luck to you with the comedy and everything. You know, I know. So, Comedy Central, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a big deal. That's a big deal.
It's kind of major.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I got you.
All right. Well, anyway, Kara, good luck to you with the interview.
Thank you, my friend.
Today.
I will let you know how it goes.
Okay, and everybody, thank you for joining us, and we'll be back here tomorrow.
You have been listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio Studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.